How you doing? This is Ganas. You're listening to Dublab Radio, and we're here with the one and only Mark Guerrero. How you doing?
Good. Nice pronunciation. I like that.
Great. Thanks for coming. Mark is from Mark and the Escorts.
Originally,
and major East LA band, and you're going to be playing a set of music for us today?
Yeah, this is a very cool thing, because, you know, the East Side Sound is what they've called the music boom that happened in East LA in the 60s, and I was fortunate enough to be there pretty much from the beginning. The Escorts started in 1963, and sort of between 63 and 66 or 67, there was just this, it actually went a little beyond that, but there was this particular sound and a lot of groups that had national hit records and a style, and there was a garage band on every block. It was just an incredible music boom, and I'm going to play 30 songs from that era, and my group was part of that era. We did two singles for GMP Crescendo Records, produced by Billy Cardenas, who also produced the Blendells, the Premieres, a lot of the other East LA groups. And so we're just going to kind of go into that little world and show what was happening there. A lot of talent, a lot of bands, a lot of recordings being made, and there was a style to it, as you'll hear.
Great. Were you guys recording in a specific studio, or were
good question.
There many throughout?
A lot of the Billy Cardenas' groups that he managed, recorded at Stereo Master Studio in Hollywood, which is very popular, and a great engineer that was one of the pioneers in stereo recording. I do want to also say that aside from Billy Cardenas, another major figure was Eddie Davis, who owned 8 record labels, very small independent labels, Faro, Linda, Rampart, and some others. And many of these groups recorded for those labels, and many of them were produced by Billy Cardenas or managed by Billy Cardenas. So that was it. But then there were a lot of other bands that were not with those people. Mm-hmm. They were really good. And, of course, there was the Midnighters, Little Ray Jimenez. There was just a lot of talent going on.
Absolutely. What were the kind of like influences at this time? Because, you know, it's easy to say the East Side Sound and then like things get kind of put in a box. But I feel in that time, you know, between 65 and 70, the amount of experimentation that was going on and the meshing and the mixing of sound was like really on another level.
Well, good point. Well, that's why I specified like between 63 and 66 or 67, because that was a specific sound and style. When you started getting into 67, that's when the psychedelic thing started to come out, the Summer of Love, Sgt. Pepper, and then 68 Cream and Hendrix. And so then the East LA band started to develop some of the psychedelic sounds and change their music, change the names of the bands. And then came the Latin influence. You know, a lot of the bands started using congas and timbales and getting more Latinized. Yeah. But in that early period, it was a specific thing, and that's kind of what we're concentrating on here, not the later El Chicano type of thing that came on a little bit later in the 60s. We're talking about the early to mid-60s thing that was a tremendous boom that sort of so many people came out of and became successful in the 70s and 80s out of that. Los Lobos were kind of at the little tail end of that.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely a breeding ground for a lot of things.
Great. And just before we get started with the music, what have you been up to recently?
Well, I continue to occasionally do a Mark and the Escorts reunions. Once in a while, I do a concert of my own music. I've done quite a few what I call lecture performances, where I've gone to UC Berkeley or, you know, Museo Alemán. What's it? There's a museum that I did in Santa Fe, various colleges, and I speak about the history of Chicano music, Chicano rock, really, and then I'll perform some, or sometimes I'll do a lecture performance on my dad, Lalo Guerrero, who's considered the father of Chicano music. Mm-hmm. And I've done some presentations about his life and career, and he and I, the music we did together, and I'll show videos of us performing together. And so I do those two lectures. And then I live and gig out in the Palm Springs, California area.
Great.
And I work on my website, which is very important to me, because it helps document the East Side Sound of the 60s in East LA, but also just sort of Chicano music in general. So I've been researching, interviewing people, doing radio shows, and promoting Chicano music and the East Side Sound.
Great. And what's the site?
markguerrero.com, markguerrero.com.
Great, go check that out. I'm sure there's a lot of great information on there for you. And how are we going to start out the set here?
Well, I thought a nice logical way to start it out was there was a group called the Romancers. And I believe they were the first group managed by Billy Cardenas. And they were really one of the early East Side sound groups that, you know, if not the first, it fits into that little category. And they did some records that had vocals on them, but around 1963 or 4 sometime, maybe it was 4, they did an album for Bob Keane's Delphi Records. Bob Keane was Richie Valens' producer and record label, Delphi. Well, he had a label called Donna also, Bob Keane, and the Romancers did an album called The Sloss and Shuffle. And the title track, actually the name of the album was Do the Slosson. The title track, the main track on the thing was called Sloss and Shuffle, and I love this track, and it kind of exemplifies kind of the early East Side sound, the style of guitar playing. I just want to say that on this record, the Romancers were Max Ubaez, the leader, on rhythm guitar, and he wrote this song and wrote many of the songs. Andy Tesso on lead guitar. He was one of the sort of the forefathers of the East LA style of playing on a Fender Telecaster. You'll hear the sound, and you'll recognize it on a lot of other records here. Chris Pasquale on bass, Armando Mora on tenor sax, and Manuel Mosqueda on drums. And so they're one of the early, really good bands, and one of the first bands to make a record. And this song is really exemplifies the East Side sound. It's called Sloss and Shuffle.
Great.
Sloss and Shuffle, still love it. It still sounds great today. And those guys were only, you know, probably in their mid-teens at the time, maybe late teens, but they were young guys and they sound great. Now the next song I want to play is the first big hit out of the East Side Sound by the Premiers from San Gabriel, Farmer John. And what's interesting about this was it was a song by Don and Dewey, an R&B duo. And Billy Cardenas told the Premiers, you know, it'd be cool to record it, but let's record it like the Sloss and Shuffle. And you'll hear how similar this song is, the backing to what you just heard. And the style of the guitar playing, the guitar player on this is Lawrence Perez, and his brother John on drums, Frank Zuniga on bass, and George Delgado on rhythm guitar. But you'll hear that, you know, even John's style sounds a little like Andy's. Everybody's influencing each other in the style, and that's what started to create this East Side sound. Farmer John made it to number 19 on the charts, national charts in 1964, and they went out and started touring the country. They were still high school students, and you know, they played with the Zombies, and I believe they're on the bill with the Stones, and it was an amazing thing on the national TV shows. And so here is Farmer John.
How's your pagoda? Has anybody seen Kosher Pickle Harry? Tell him that Herbert is looking for him.
Who's Herbert?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. The premiere!
Yeah!
A couple of more things I want to mention about Farmer John. The guy, the gentleman introducing the band was Billy Cardenas.
Okay.
And the screaming on there, I've talked to Billy about this, and where he got the idea was Trini Lopez, a Mexican-American who had some big hits in the early 60s, If I Had a Hammer. His first big hit record was If I Had a Hammer, recorded live at PJ's in Hollywood, and there was a real live crowd there. And so there was, you could hear people screaming and yelling in the background on his hit records. So Billy thought, hey, we should do that too, because it sounds exciting. But instead of doing it always live in a nightclub, he just brought a bunch of girls in from the neighborhood, and they would just scream in the studio. And you'll hear that on our record. You'll hear that on a few of these records, where he's just bringing a bunch of girls to scream, give us some excitement.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of a theme for many people, that whole screaming sound, you know, and even outside of, you know, East L.A., bands and records. I know I always like it.
Yeah, it adds some excitement. So now the next hit record. This one also went national by a group called the Blendells. They were great. My band Mark and the Escorts did many gigs with them on the bill, and we loved them a lot. We really liked their tight little funky style. They were a little bit older than us. They were like seniors in high school. We were like 10th grade at that time when we'd be playing on the bill with them. And the members of the Blendells were Mike Rincon on bass, who was the leader, Rudy Valona on lead guitar, who was very good. I went to high school with him. He has since passed away. Tommy Esparza, rhythm guitar, Don Cardenas, tenor sax, and Sal Murillo was the lead singer. This song It's called La 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 La. It was written by Stevie Wonder. It was an obscure track. They came up with their own rendition of it. And it went up the charts. It went up to, I believe, number 62 nationally, but it was like number one in Hawaii, number one in Phoenix. It was way up in Los Angeles. So they did some Dick Clark tours, and they had some success for about a year. And this was their hit, and it's called La 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 La.
I'm gonna do a little song for you now that'll make you clap your hands, kick your feet, and as a matter of fact, it'll tear you up. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Once again, you hear the crowd screaming in the studio. Now, so that was a hit in, when was that? Early, it was 1965. And we have something going on, right? The Premieres have this big hit in July of 64. Now the Blundells, early 65, have their hit. Cannibal and the Headhunters come along. And they picked up a song by Chris Kenner called Land of a Thousand Dances. It was written by Fats Domino and Chris Kenner. Chris Kenner had it out, and it wasn't that big a hit. It just kind of made a little bit of noise, but it was kind of popular in East Los Angeles. And so Cannibal and the Headhunters had a session scheduled to record it. Cannibal and the Headhunters were going to be backed up by a band called the Rhythm Playboys, and Billy Cardenas and Eddie Davis had a little falling out at the session, and Billy pulled the band. And so Eddie called up the Blundells and said, "Hey, can you come in, man?" And they were at a rehearsal. They just showed up. And this session actually had two bass players. I think Billy Watson was the second bass player. And the Blundells are backing up the Premieres. They cut this, and it went to number 30 in April of 1965. Cannibal and the Headhunters wound up on the Beatle tour, playing at Shea Stadium, Hollywood Bowl. I saw them at the Hollywood Bowl.
Awesome.
They were the only opening act that people paid attention to. And, of course, the members of Cannibal Headhunters, Frankie Cannibal Garcia, Robert Rabbit Jaramillo, Joe Yo-Yo Jaramillo, and Richard Scar Lopez. Those were their placas, their sort of neighborhood nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jaramillo brothers, Robert and Joe, were in the group. And there they were, touring with the Beatles. And
yeah. How was that being in the Hollywood Bowls, I mean, with the Beatles? And, I mean, I'm sure these guys were your buddies or acquaintances.
Well, at that time, I didn't know them that well. Okay. Well, I had done a couple of shows with them, but, you know, there was so much going on. A lot of the shows we would do, there'd be like four or five acts on a night, and sometimes we'd have to go to another place. So at that time, you know, some of us knew each other, but some of us were just like ships in the night.
Yeah.
So at that time, I didn't really know them, but I just remember being there at Hollywood Bowl and being happy and proud for them that they were doing well, and they were from the neighborhood. It was a great thing.
That's amazing. How long was the original Land of a Thousand Dances out prior to Cannibal and the Headhunters doing it?
I would say... I think Chris Kenner's maybe came out in a year or two before.
Okay.
63 maybe. It was, in fact, I had that record. I remember it was a red and white label, but it was, a lot of people in East LA had the record, but it wasn't really a huge hit nationally until Cannibal Headhunters did it. Thousand Dances by Cannibal and the Headhunters, a huge hit. Now we're going to play the record by my group, Mark and the Escorts. I guess I don't have to repeat what I've already said. We're cool. Okay, we were just little kids, 14, 15 years old, my first band. I'm on lead guitar. Here is Get Your Baby, Crescendo Records.
Oh!
So those Mark and the Escorts members were yours truly on lead guitar, Ernie Hernandez on drums, Richard Rosas on bass, who later became Joe Walsh and Neil Young's bass player, Trini Basulto on tenor sax, Richard Magana, baritone sax, Robert Warren, rhythm guitar, and Joe Cabral, Farfisa organ, March of 1965.
You said you were 15 when that came out. How are you guys getting around to the gigs at this time?
Parents of some of the guys. Our drummer's father used to take us in his truck. He was in construction. He'd take our instruments in the truck. And then the bass player's mother or father or somebody would take the rest of us in a car, and our cousins. We just have adults take us to the gigs.
Great. Were you guys playing at bars, or were they just more like community center gigs and things of that nature?
That's another thing that we're so fortunate is that doesn't really exist today. But at that time, there were all these places that had teenage dances. Mm-hmm. And we played, there was a circuit, the Kennedy Hall in East L.A., St. Alphonsus Auditorium, the Montebello Ballroom, the Big Union Hall, the Little Union Hall. There were all these places, and each one had dances and four or five bands on the bill, and there were all these places to play. There were more places than I just mentioned, but those were kind of the most popular. So we worked almost every weekend as high school kids.
Were there a couple main promoters who were really putting these acts together at the time?
There was a guy named George Carlin, who was an ex-boxer. He used to book the Montebello Ballroom a lot and the Big Union. There was a guy named Sam Nevada that would book the Little Union. And Billy Cardenas booked some things. There was a guy named Johnny Jay. There was all kinds of guys that were booking shows. It was quite a scene.
Great. What do you think started kind of like, I noticed around this time, like, your band and several other East L.A. bands that were around at the time started getting a lot more aggressive, you know, like you hear it in there, you know, like people use the term now 60s punk.
That's what I was saying, it's like a little bit of punk, the roots of punk there. It could be, yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like a lot of bands at that time, whether it be the Midnighters or Cannibal or the Premieres, kind of really had this aggression to their sound that was really coming out and thrashing. You know, it was going beyond normal rock and roll or rhythm and blues and whatnot.
Yeah. Or another Chicano band out of Saginaw, Michigan, Question Mark and the Mysterians, 96 Tears is very punky sounding, you know.
Yeah,
and their attitude and the way, you know, Question Mark dressed and looked, it was kind of pre-punk.
Absolutely. And then there's even punk bands who are covering his songs, like the Modern Lovers covered 96 Tears, and also Suicide, which is my favorite cover, which they were early 70s New York.
And in the 90s, Smash Mouth covered Can't Get Enough for You, Baby.
Really?
That was also Question Mark and Mr. Jones.
Wow.
Can't get enough for you, baby.
I never even thought of that. Maybe I was just turning off because it was that band.
Yeah, yeah.
But totally right.
But, yeah, that was them too. I got to meet Question Mark. I did a gig with the Cannibal and Headhunters band in 2010 in Pittsburgh. We did a PBS special on Question Mark and Mysterians. We were backstage hanging out with them. And in fact, they went on right before us and we went on last. And so we were kind of hanging out. The two Chicano bands were the very last ones on that night. I don't know if they put us last for that reason.
Yeah,
but it was
to
cool.
Give you guys props, hopefully.
Yeah, who knows. But it was cool. He was an interesting guy. He always said he was born on Mars.
Yeah, I consider him kind of like the Mexican Chicano Sun Ra. You know, saying he's from other planets and whatnot, and really taking himself seriously.
Yeah, and before I met him in person that day in 2010, I talked to him on the phone a couple of years before about something else, and we talked for like an hour, and he believes all this stuff, you know, and he's an interesting character.
Great.
He is from another planet. Okay, so the next song is by a group called Ronnie and the Casuals, and sometimes they were called Ronnie and the Pomona Casuals, and they were also produced by Billy Cardenas, and they were released on a Bob Keane label. And back at that time, around 65, there was a big dance craze going on called The Jerk. And they came out with a song called I Want to Do the Jerk. And their lead singer was an African-American, Charles Lett, who was only 16 years old. And when you hear him sing right now, you'll think he was 35, you know, or 45. I mean, he's very cool. Ronnie Duran was the band leader. It was they were out of Pomona. And I love this record. It still sounds good today. It's called I Want to Do the Jerk.
I want to do the jerk, yeah. With the only you, yeah. I said I want to do the jerk, baby. With the only you, yeah.
amazing that lead singer was like 16, huh?
Yeah, we're just saying that he sounds like a grown man.
Yes, it's been through a lot. Right. But we did many gigs with Ronnie the Casuals as well, and they sounded just that strong live on stage. It was a really cool group. Next up, we're talking about the ladies, right? There were women there too.
That's right.
There was a group called the Sisters, made up of Ursi Rosella and Mary Arvizu. Ursi later was with El Chicano for a while. She was on their first album in their early part of their career, and recently did an album produced by Ry Cooter a few years ago.
Hmm. A solo album?
Yeah, solo album.
Great.
This was one of their early singles. It was also recorded on a Bob Keane label, and it's called G Baby G. Let's check it out.
G Baby G, G Baby G, G Baby G, Baby G. I love my baby, yes I do, and I can trust in him because I know that he'll be true. I love my baby, he's so good, yeah, and I will love him all my life, that's understood. I'll tell him, G-Baby, I love you, G-Baby.
Sisters, another group managed by Billy Cardenas.
Nice. What was the reaction of the crowd with the Sisters? You know, because there wasn't a lot of female singers, I guess, at that time. I mean, there was a lot, but haven't hit records.
Well, they were kind of like in the mold of, say, the Supremes. You know, right at that time, the Supremes were really big. The three girls up front,
yeah,
and there were a lot of sort of the Motown and female African American groups. But they were sort of the Chicano version of it. So there's three girls standing up front with usually the Ronnie and the Casuals backed them up. I remember we backed them up one time. And so, you know, it was just this very sort of a dignified three ladies up front singing great.
Yeah.
So there was a positive reaction, but nothing, weird or crazy.
Yeah. Say, for instance, what were the gigs like at this time? Because I guess... You know, in the 40s, you start having shows that are African-Americans, Mexican-Americans starting to do stuff together, maybe slightly outside of Los Angeles, but Los Angeles County. So this is like 20 years down the line. What was the crowd like for your shows? Yeah.
The crowds in East L.A., it was mostly Mexican-American. There were some others, but it was mainly Mexican-American. However, there were some venues like, you probably heard of El Monte Legion Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Now there, and that was early 60s, there'd be blacks, whites, browns, all together, peacefully enjoying the music, you know. So there was like mixed crowds, but most of these gigs were mostly you know, Mexican American, Chicanos.
Cool.
Okay, so what's next on the list? Oh, okay. Now we get to Little Ray Jimenez. Have you heard of Little Ray?
Yes, know. I heard Little
Ray. Now, Little Ray was and is a great singer, great performer. You know, he to me, he's as good as the Motown artists. You know, he was like a Chicano Motown artist. He could dance, he could sing, he would sweat, he'd get on his knees, the girls would scream. He was really good. And I'm going to play actually a little mini set of Little Ray things. We're gonna hear four things, four records that Little Ray made. And as you'll hear how excellent he is. And here's the first one he recorded for a Bob Keane label once again. And it's a song called I Who Have Nothing. I don't know. You know, it was probably recorded, I'm sure recorded before he did it, but this is a wonderful version. And a few years later, Tom Jones had a hit with it. But I definitely prefer Little Ray's to Tom Jones' version, as you'll hear here.
Absolutely.
And let's hear the great Little Ray, I Who Have Nothing. Here's a very obscure Little Ray recording. Now, a lot of people don't know that for at least a six-month period, Little Ray was a member of the Midnighters. Little Willie G and Little Ray were both frontmen of the Midnighters, and I did see them at least once in that way, and it was fantastic seeing them both together. And this was a record made during that time, a very obscure thing. A lot of people don't even know about it, let alone have it. And it's called Loretta. And if you listen carefully, you can hear Little Willie G, especially near the end, singing harmony backgrounds, really cool backgrounds going on. And Little Ray singing lead. And it's called Loretta. Check it out. ¶¶ It was billed as Little Ray and the Midnighters, MIDNIGHTER, before they changed it to NITERS.
Mm-hmm.
Before they were the Midnighters, it was the Midnighters, the regular spelling of the word. Okay, now moving along. Now, this one I selected because it showed the excitement and the pandemonium that Little Ray caused, and the Midnighters and many groups at that time. There were these East LA rock and roll shows at East LA College, and all of us, you know, played these shows often. I think they had them once a year.
Mm-hmm.
But here's Little Ray singing Smokey Robinson's Ooh Baby Baby at an East LA rock and roll show live, and you will hear the girls in the background, and this is a real audience, a real live performance, screaming like if it's for the Beatles. You'll hear the excitement.
And were these recordings, were some of them recorded?
Yeah, they were recorded.
They were live recordings.
They put out an album of these shows every year.
Yeah.
And so this is a live recording. You know, sometimes they drowned out the singing, but I thought it was important just to show how the excitement that was generated. And you can hear him, he's singing his butt off as well.
I think one of the Beck album covers, he actually uses one of the covers from those East LA shows. Like
it
looks kind of like a kaleidoscopy.
You know how like Beck knows about all this, right? Do you know?
Yeah, I was curious. I know he has some kind of tie-in.
No, because his mother married a Chicano, Sean Carrillo, and I know him. I'll say some later about that. But anyway, so he was raised, you know, by a Chicano father, and lived, you know, not too far from East LA. You know, and then his father owned a bar in L.A. I think it was called the Atomic Cafe or something.
Yeah.
And they used to have punk groups play there in the 80s and all that. And so Beck was around all that. So he was aware of the whole East Side thing. I think that's why one of his albums is called Güero, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he's hip to the East L.A. stuff. And the reason I know his dad is because when my dad and I went to perform together in Paris, France in 1990, really it was 1998, Flaco Jimenez was performing, and we went, and Sean Carrillo, mm-hmm. Beck's father, went with us and documented it, filmed it.
Amazing.
And so that's how I got to know him and met Beck's mother. I never met Beck, though.
There you go.
What's next on the list? Oh, we're going to hear Ooh Baby Baby, so check this out and check out the crowd and the excitement.
And now, you know who it is. Here he is, Little Ray.
Baby, baby, baby.
Super amazing. It must have been nice to be him after the shows.
I'm sure. Now, here's an example of Ray doing more of his sort of R&B. You know, he could sing, croon a ballad as good as anybody, but he could, you know, do the James Brown Sweating and Dancing or Jackie Wilson, whatever. But here's a song that he recorded called Shake, Shout, and Soul, and it was recorded live at the Santa Monica Civic. And he told me the story that... you know, the whole bill was Anglo groups, you know, of the era. And so up comes Little Ray, who happened to be backed up by the premieres on this show. And these five Chicano guys come out, you know, and he said the crowd suddenly went like, got quiet. And it's like, oh, no. They went into the song, and within a few bars, the people were like, they won him over. And you'll see why. Check it out. Shake, Shout, and Soul. Little Ray backed by the premieres.
Yeah! Let's hear it for Little Ray.
It's the last time, and you really got something going. All right, let me hear you. Are you ready? Let me hear you. Are you ready now? All right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, pick up your heels, you better hold on tight. Come on in, we're gonna party all night.
Come on.
Yep, so a mini set from Little Ray Jimenez, who's still going strong. You know, he's got a studio in East LA called Sanctuary Studios, and still performs and still good.
And that's right.
Now we're going to get into the Midnighters. Okay, so the Midnighters were the most popular band in East LA in that period, and like I said, most of the time, Little Willie G. You know, there was that period where Ray was in the band, but usually it was Little Willie G. was just the only front man.
Mm-hmm.
They made several albums. They were very popular, and so we're going to have a little mini set of the Midnighters here, and the first song I picked out was Land of a Thousand Dances. Now, we heard Cannibal the Headhunter's version earlier. Now, this is a different version. And from what I've heard, it was a live version. Little Ray told me that he was visiting his relatives up in the Fresno area, Delano, that's where he's from. And he was coming down by car to East LA College to perform, and he was going to sing this song. And he ran into a snowstorm or something happened, some car problem happened where he couldn't get there. So Willie went ahead and sang it, and it wound up becoming a hit record. It did go national. It didn't go really high, but it did really well locally. And it's become one of their signature songs as well. So let's hear the Midnighters version of Land of a Thousand Dances. When I say they were the first group that spelled the, T-H-E-E, not in the biblical sense, but to say we are the Midnighters. We're not just the Midnighters. We are the Midnighters. And they started spelling the name, like I said, N-I-T-E-R-S rather than the G-H-T. And part of the reason was because of there was already a group called the Midnighters. What's the guy's name? I forgot.
I'm forgetting.
Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. So they changed it to the other spelling. Probably their biggest local hit, and it was huge, it was on all the top rock stations in L.A., was, of course, their instrumental, Whittier Boulevard. Whittier Boulevard ran right through East Los Angeles, and that's where we would go cruising, right down, and especially between Atlantic Boulevard and about Ford, round and round, cruising like 64, 65, 66, 67, in that era. Mm. And so they wrote a song, and at the beginning they say, let's take a trip down Whittier Boulevard. And I think the record was inspired by the Rolling Stones, 2120 South Michigan Avenue. You can hear some similarities, but but they put their own spin on that vibe and got a hit out of it. And it's called Whittier Boulevard.
Let's take a trip down Whittier Boulevard!
You were cruising Whittier Boulevard, probably hearing that song
I did cruise,
on the
yes.
radio.
Yes.
Can you paint a little picture of what that was like?
It's a lot of, you know, lowrider cars, you know, 57 Chevys, 62 Impalas, you know, some of them lowered down, chrome rims, you know, guys flirting with girls, going back and forth, sometimes just, you know, people standing on the street. And it was really, you know, people trying to meet girls was one of the part. You know, the main purposes of it, you know.
Yeah.
But to show off their cars, and it became this big ritual.
Nice. Were there any places that you remember going to afterwards? Were there any, like, hangouts that, like, okay, say, for instance, the cruising's over. Was there any places to go?
Well, there were all these little hamburger places and stuff. I can't remember the names of them. There was one just on Atlantic, south of Whittier. I forgot the name. But there were a few places that people would go afterwards, yeah. It was kind of a fun scene. It eventually got shut down, you know, for a few years. I think it picked up again, and I don't know what happened, but the police shut it down at some point.
How important do you think Whittier Boulevard and this kind of, like, scene that was really dictated by the youth, like, did that play an important part in spreading the music and people learning about different songs and bands from each other?
You mean because they would hear it cruising?
Yeah, because they would hear it cruising, or just people are getting together and
absolutely.
Socializing, kind of getting outside just their block or their neighborhood friends and kind of expanding.
And the other cool thing was there were 3 record stores in that little strip I'm telling you about, from Atlantic Boulevard to Ford, which is probably 1 mile. I mean, it's not that big. There was the Record Rack, the Record Inn, and Story Music, and they all sold the East LA Records.
Mm-hmm.
So people just go down there and buy all these 45s and kept us all popular.
Was Sound of Music much later?
Much later, yeah. That was later.
Was that like late 70s or
probably.
Something like that?
It certainly wasn't there in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's sort of taken over. But back then there were three record shops. There were 3 movie theaters in that little place. The Boulevard, the Center, and the Golden Gate.
Any favorite movies from that era?
A Hard Day's Night, right? 1964. I saw it at the Boulevard Theater, and people were screaming at the screen for the Beatles, you know, even in East LA. It was very cool.
That's awesome.
The next one I picked out by the Midnighters, and this is one of my favorites. This is as rock and roll to me as they got. Very kind of, you know, edgy, punky rock and roll. And it's a very cool song. And it's called I Never Knew I Had It So Bad. And I did speak to somebody in the Midnighters recently about that. And I think it was it Larry Rendon, the sax player? Somebody told me that the idea for the song came from some guy was like complaining about everything, you know, about, oh man, you know, this and that and this and that. And the other guy says, God, I never knew I had it so bad. You know, I thought, and so, hey, that's a great title. So it's very cool. It's got, you know, a really cool guitar lick in it. And it's kind of edgy, punky, as you say, as you called that other song. So let's take a look at it. It's Never Knew I Had It So Bad.
All right, now.
Midnighters, so that's my little mini Midnighters set, the most popular band in East LA in the 60s. Next, now here's an East LA classic, and it was by a group called The Jaguars, led by Mario Panacqua. And Mario wrote this song and played lead guitar on it. It's a really nice ballad called Where Lovers Go. Another distinctive thing about the Jaguars was they were the first group to have the Salas Brothers, who later became Tierra, a hit group in the 80s, Tierra. Mario heard the Salas Brothers singing at a church function or something and had to go ask their parents if they could join his group, and they said okay. And that sort of launched the Salas Brothers.
I heard stories of one of them being so young that they had to put a box on stage for him to reach the mic.
Little Stevie Salas, yes. Yes, he was probably like 12 or 13. So, and I heard them, you know, I was on the bill with them many times. The Alexandria Hotel, the St. Alphonsus Auditorium. I remember it like it's yesterday. But anyway, this is a very cool song, and it's called Where Lovers Go.